Responsible eating and living.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to Ask a Vegan. It's August 26, 2012, and today is a very special day. It's my mother's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom.
Woo-hoo!
And it's also Women's Equality Day here in the United States. This is a day proclaimed each year by the United States President to commemorate the granting of the vote to women throughout the country on an equal basis with men. And this happened when women were given the right to vote on August 26, 1920. Not very long ago. Gosh, in 8 years, it'll be 100 years since women had the right to vote. 92 years ago. And we really have a long way to go as a species, I think. Gosh, we just gave women the right to vote 92 years ago. That's not really a very long time ago. But every day we see improvements. I like to look on the bright side, but we do have a long way to go in terms of really being compassionate human beings and really making the most of what we have in our DNA. That's kind of exciting. I think it can only get better. I want to hope it's only going to get better, although we see a lot of crazy things going on day after day. I like to put out inspiration, things to think about, kind of give you a different point of view from some of the things you're hearing about in mainstream media. And I thank you for listening. Today we're going to be talking about a number of things. Of course, I always like to touch on health and some of the chronic things people are suffering all around the world. And we're going to be talking about some fun things, bananas, monkeys. So I hope you stay with me during this program. First thing I wanted to say is this is Real Worldwide Radio. Right now, Real Worldwide Radio is produced by Responsible Eating and Living, a nonprofit I founded last year. And the Ask a Vegan show is the first show that we are producing. And my dream is to become a full-fledged network of all kinds of audio and video programming. But we're starting just with this. And we'll see where we go from there. You can contact me anytime at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. And I really appreciate the comments that I get from people all over the world. One of the things that is somewhat disheartening is that while I hear about people from Europe, from France, from down under in Australia, all over the place, people are suffering from many of the same diseases, the same ailments. Crohn's disease, cancer, multiple sclerosis. Of course, most people have some sort of heart disease. And it's primarily due to what we eat. And I also get very frustrated because today, even with the internet and all of the great ways we have to share information, oh, we're still in the dark. I keep hearing about more and more people who are suffering from Crohn's disease as an example, and they're on these horrific strong antibiotics, which can only cause more problems. And yet, there are ways to control and reverse this disease. I've talked about on the show before. If this is the first time you're listening and you want information, please send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And if there's anything that is bothering you, I'd love to hear from you and maybe I can help direct you to some information that will give you relief. I want to say, who am I? Certainly you can read at responsibleeatingandliving.com or at my personal website, karenhartglass.com. More about me and who I am. I am not a medical doctor. I am not a registered dietitian. I am not an unregistered dietitian. I am not a nutritionist. I am a vegan, and I have been for almost 30 years. And I have passion for food. Now, my personal background, I have a master's degree in chemical engineering. I like science. I like reading about science. I remember when I first opened this show, I can't even remember when it was, 2009 maybe, 2010. We have since done about 104 episodes of the Ask a Vegan show. And when I first opened, I reminded myself and my new listeners about a commercial I remembered seeing about Abraham Lincoln, and the character was sitting at a desk trying to get a job, and he was saying that he didn't have any credentials except that he had read a lot of books and he had learned what he had learned from reading books. And I like to use that because most of what I have learned about nutrition has been through a number of things. Certainly reading. I read a lot about food. Another thing is I have gone to many, many lectures about food, and now I interview many people about food on my It's All About Food show on Wednesdays, which is now moving to Tuesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network starting in September 2012. We've been on Wednesdays, now we're going to be on Tuesdays starting in September. And I talk to a lot of authors about food on that show, so that enables me to learn even more. The other thing is I put the information that I read about into practice, and this has really been honed over a number of decades. When people say, how do I do this or how do I make that? I usually have an answer. And then the other thing is I was fortunate, unfortunate, depends on the side of the coin you look at, to have experienced advanced ovarian cancer 6 years ago. And I was able to really focus in on so many different things that I learned in order to heal. And I like to share this with you. That's where I'm coming from. Now, when I'm talking about people that have experience in nutrition and have credentials, that can be a good thing and maybe not such a good thing, because I certainly know many, many medical doctors who know nothing about nutrition. They didn't learn about nutrition in school. They don't want to know about it, and they kind of brush it aside as something that isn't important. There are also many people who have studied nutrition. There are many dietitians, and unfortunately, just like any field, there are good ones and there are not so good ones. I remember when I was in the hospital during my treatment for cancer, I would speak to dietitians because I wanted them to know about the food that I was expecting to be served, which was a big challenge. And I found that most of these dietitians didn't know about healthy food. They didn't know about the most recent findings to help either promote cancer or fight cancer. It was mind-boggling to me what cancer patients were being served. Ham, Ensure, dairy foods, things with sugar, things that feed cancer, rather than foods that have immune system boosting nutrients. So you get to learn, you get to really be wary of some people that have certain credentials, unfortunately. And dietitians come from all different places and learn all different kinds of things. And it's really hard for the average person who isn't kind of obsessed and passionate about healthy food to really know who to believe. And I am here offering information. You can believe me or not, but I like to put a common sense, practical face to information and let you know that what I promote is what I practice. So, try it. Couldn't hurt. There's an article in the New York Times this weekend about how supermarkets, some of them, are now offering dietitians who work for the supermarket and are available for customers who come in to discuss diet and nutrition. And this is really fascinating to me. Number one, it's showing the good thing is that people are more interested in nutrition. There is definitely a market for people interested in healthy food. I think the message is getting out that food can be medicine. And speaking of food being medicine, coming up on this Wednesday on It's All About Food, I will be speaking to Brian Clement, who runs the Hippocrates Institute. And he is coming out with a 3-volume set, the first being called Food is Medicine. And this is an interesting concept, and the FDA actually doesn't like us calling food medicine because then they have to regulate it and tell us how much of whatever we can have. But we do know that there are lots of wonderful things in healthy plant foods that we're supposed to be eating so that we can live long and prosper. Speaking of living long and prospering, I'm thinking right now of Neil Armstrong, who just passed away yesterday at 82 years old, and makes me think about all of the great things that are out there for us to discover. And I certainly am fascinated by space travel and hope that we continue to do more of it. But there's so much here on our own planet that are mysteries. We know so little about our own home. And we're just really, really digging at touching the surface of nutrition right now, discovering what components are in our food. Certainly everybody says protein, 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 and I don't think most people realize that there are 3 macronutrients: protein, carbohydrates, and fats. There are so many different micronutrients, and we're just discovering them and giving faces and names to them and discovering what they can do. And all of this is really interesting. I hope that more dietitians learn about the power of plant foods. But we don't have to be nutritionists. We don't have to be experts to eat well or to prepare healthy meals. That's what I like to do here. Bring common sense to healthy eating. And I'm going to talk today about bananas. But before I do, I just wanted to say one more thing about this article on dietitians. The recommendation in this particular New York Times article from this one dietitian was that she was recommending more aerobic activity, eating more fish, and using canola oil. And where this may be better than what some people are doing, it's not the best information. Why is it that the really good information takes decades to get out to the public? People think canola oil is healthy. When are we going to discover that no oil is healthy? That we need fat, and we need fat from whole food sources: avocado, coconut, raw nuts, and seeds. Now, I'm not saying that you should totally avoid oil, but oil should be considered a treat, a luxury, something that is not what we want to consume on a daily basis. And if we are consuming oil, it should be just a teeny tiny little bit. And when dietitians recommend something like canola oil, it's just frustrating to me. I know that when people hear, what, I can't eat oil, they get very, very hysterical because people like oil. And a lot of the media has been promoting olive oil as something that's healthy. We have a long way to go. Then the other thing that this nutritionist, this dietitian recommends is eating more fish. And the response in the article is that some people don't even like fish. And so they're being made to learn to eat something that they don't like because they think it's healthy. And if that's the case, why not tell them the truth and tell them to eat lots of dark leafy green vegetables? Really jump ahead of the game. Some people think they don't like dark leafy green vegetables. So why don't they learn to eat what's really good for them, dark leafy green vegetables? And if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, we have lots of recipes with dark leafy green vegetables to make them taste delicious. We've got a long way to go, don't we? Right, so let's get to the big topic of the day that I want to talk about, and that is bananas. I like to say that every food has its story. And bananas have a story. I probably won't get to the whole banana story today, but I wanted to touch on the banana. Now, what made me think about the banana today is a story that I recently read about. And that had to do with a study by some people, and it was published, in the American Chemical Society, ACS, Chemistry for Life. The article is called Good News for Banana Lovers, Help May Be on the Way to Slow That Rapid Over-ripening. Oh, yes. Doesn't that really drive you crazy, that rapid over-ripening? Actually, I want to say before I get into this article that I like to buy organic, very ripe bananas. And sometimes in some stores, they discount them because people don't want to get them when they're ripe and starting to brown and mushy. But these are the perfect ones to freeze. So what you do is you buy them, you peel them, and you save the bananas in a container and freeze them, and they're ready to go for your smoothies. And when they're really ripe, they're really sweet. These are the perfect ones for like a raw vegan ice cream where you blend the banana up with other frozen berries and, of course, the smoothies. Really, really delicious. Or you could just freeze them and then bake with them later. That's what I like to do with mushy bananas. But apparently, stores don't like mushy, overripe bananas because most people don't buy them and they have to throw them away. So what we like to do in the food business is to find ways to make food last longer. That's how preservatives have come along. That's how hydrogenated oils and trans fats came along. Even high fructose corn syrup. These man-made materials have extended the shelf life of food in stores. They make them last longer so they can stay on the shelf until they're sold, and supermarkets like this. The thing is, anything that extends the life of food, I don't think can be a good thing. We want to eat our food fresh. And anything in a box is not fresh. It's old. Just think about it. When you go to the supermarket and you see food in a box, it's old. Does that sound good to you? Now, sure, there are some things that are okay that last a long time that are not fresh. Flax seeds, for example. Flax seeds, if they are stored appropriately in a cool, dry place, can last literally forever before you come along and grind them up and eat the flax meal, which is really, really healthy and nutritious. But for the most part, most of our foods should be eaten right after harvesting or not long after. But we've got all kinds of scientists out there that need to come up with creative ways to keep their jobs going. And so they come up with all kinds of things to study. And this one group came up with a method to keep bananas from ripening, or at least they believe they found a way to extend the delay of ripening and allow bananas to stay fresh for up to 12 days. The thing is, they're using something called chitosan. Chitosan. And unfortunately, chitosan is something derived from shrimp and crab shells. It's they make a coating of it called hydrogel. It's a super absorbent material, and it has today many medical and commercial uses. I don't even want to think about what this hydrogel is used for. But it's getting attention to keep fruits and vegetables fresher longer. What it does is it has an action in killing bacteria that cause produce to rot. And it has low cost. And it has not been used to slow the ripening of bananas, but it is definitely being considered. This would make our friendly banana not vegan if it's coated with an animal product. So this is kind of, what can I say? This is to be expected. This is upsetting. There's a lot of these hidden things that are added to our foods that we don't know about. And frankly, I think we should know. I think there should be labeling on all of our food that says where it came from and what it's been grown with and what's on it. One of the things that boggles my mind, we've heard about this organic certification. The USDA has a certification, and farmers, some of them complain about how difficult, how expensive it is. It takes about 3 years to demonstrate that your fields are organic, and there are lots of small farmers that don't want to do it because they don't think it's worth it or it's expensive. And what drives me crazy is, why is it that farmers who grow organically have to prove themselves and have to show that they're not doing anything, that they're just growing food the way it was meant to be grown? Why is it that the industrial farmers are not the ones that have to have a certification? Why is it that the industrial farmers don't have to show that they're putting all kinds of toxic chemicals into the soil and not doing anything really to nurture or sustain the soil or nourish the soil? Why is it they don't have to go through some rigorous certification process and labeling of their foods? It's backwards. It's crazy. And I digress. I want to get back to the banana story. Okay, so this is a little scary that we can possibly have chitosan, this hydrogel, on our bananas. But the good news, maybe it's not a good news, but the thing is that we may not even have bananas to coat this hydrogel on, because for a long time we've been reading about how bananas are a dying breed. Have you heard this? I've been reading about it, gosh, for over a decade. And I had read in early 2000 that there were predictions that we might run out of bananas in 10 years. Now, here we are in 2012, and I still see plenty of reasonably priced bananas in the market. So they're still around. But apparently, thanks to selective breeding, bananas don't have seeds, and I've seen this happen in Costa Rica where you can take a piece of a banana tree and replant it and have it grow into a new tree. And basically, the Cavendish banana that we've been eating for the last 50 years or so is really just a clone of itself, And as a result, it doesn't have the ability to fight disease. And there's this thing called Panama disease, which originally wiped out in the 50s the Gros Michel, the Big Mike variety that was very, very popular in its day. And so then we moved on to the Cavendish banana. And we're all very familiar with this. It's stable, wind resistant, easy to manage, has a fast growth rate. But there is a belief that in maybe another 10 or 20 years that the Panama disease is going to come and wipe this Cavendish variety out. Okay, so there are some that say we're not going to have this banana. Now, you may have tried other bananas. I know that when I'm in Costa Rica, there's a variety of different bananas. And when I read these articles about how the Cavendish banana may disappear because of this Panama disease, they make it sound like there's no other banana out there that's really any good. And I don't think that's true. They say that some are starchier or not as sweet, and that the Cavendish is really the winner. Well, I've tried lots of different bananas, and I find that they're all very interesting and tasty, and variety is the spice of life. So it will be sad if this indeed happens, where the Cavendish is wiped out because of this hybridization, this cloning, this sterilization of the banana, because it is sterile now. It doesn't create seeds, and its method of reproducing is one where it can't protect itself in the environment because the wild strains are not being reintroduced. Okay, so we may not have the Cavendish for much longer. Let's see. But there are lots of other different kinds of bananas, and it might be interesting to see a bigger variety of them come into play. Now, one of the things that we know about bananas, or at least what the media has educated us on, is, you know, if you ask people, what are bananas good for? I'm looking for any hands raised here. What are bananas good for? Okay, potassium. We know that bananas have a lot of potassium. But the interesting thing is there are lots of other foods that have more potassium. And I just wanted to point that out because if people think they know things about food, there are things that the general public knows, and some of it may be right, some of it may not be right, but we really are so misinformed. So I think if we were on a game show right now and the question was, what food is best, is a great source for potassium, everybody's going to say bananas. But it's not the best source. It's a good source, but it doesn't have there are some foods that have a lot more. So I thought I might mention them. So bananas, one medium banana is going to have, in milligrams, 467 milligrams of potassium, 418 calories. That's one medium banana. Oh no, not calories, but weight, 118 grams. Avocado has 540 milligrams of potassium for 3 ounces. Dates, 542 for 10 dates. Apricots, dried apricots, have a whopping 814 milligrams for 10 medium apricots. And I had always heard that kiwi was good in potassium because it was some ways similar to banana, and it only has 252 in one medium, but a kiwi is small, so maybe if I had two kiwis, it would be like eating a banana, and then I'd get about 504 milligrams. Melons, cantaloupe, 494 milligrams in one cup. Raisins, half a cup. Loaded, 544 milligrams of potassium. Now, of course, if you're into juices, juicing, carrot juice, one cup, 684 milligrams of potassium. Tomato juice has got it. Prune juice. Orange juice. Hello, one cup of orange juice has 496 milligrams of potassium. Anyway, there's a lot of places to get potassium. And I love bananas. I love what they can do in so many ways. But you know what? There are so many other foods out there that we can certainly live without the banana if we had to. But for now, let's enjoy them because they're really yummy. I'm looking at this list. I mean, it's crazy. Beet greens. One cup of beet greens. 1,309 milligrams of potassium. Pinto beans, one cup, 800, and so on. There's lots of places to get potassium. Whoa, potatoes, 1,081 milligrams of potassium, most in the skin. So you want to eat your potatoes organic potatoes. Yeah, there's lots of foods that are rich in potassium that really overdo the banana. So there you go. That's the banana story. And I am sticking to it. Now, when I think about bananas, when a lot of people think of bananas, we don't just think about potassium. We think about monkeys. It's monkey food. And I was reading in the New York Times this week about this macaque, a little macaque, a monkey that's in the Tampa, Florida area that for the last 3 years or so has been infuriating the city, who's apparently free on its own. They've been trying to chase him down and catch him using injections, you know, kind of shooting it with an anesthesia to put him to sleep, and then they would capture him and put him in a, quote, safe place. And the monkey's been way too smart and has not been able to be caught for 3 years. And I just like bringing it up because I think we have a fascination with animals that desire freedom. And we're at a point where we're so disconnected to not only where our food comes from, but with wildlife, because we put these fences and these borders and these communities up, and we don't really want to mix with animals, except the handful that we've domesticated, our cats and dogs. And we're fascinated with animals, and we're fascinated with animals' desire to be free. And while the authorities are trying to get this animal, and they put some fear out saying that these macaque can carry hepatitis B, so they want to get it to prevent any kind of disease infestation, which is relatively unlikely. there are a lot of people that are cheering on this animal and want him to remain free. I think it's something that's within all of us, this love of freedom. And then it boggles my mind when I think about how we keep our head in the sand, unfortunately, and allow the factory farming of animals to go on so that we can eat them. There is clearly a disconnect. There's a numbing. And if people looked into their heart and soul before they took a bite of what they were about to eat and thought about every step of the way about how that food got to their plate, I would like to think that some people would drop their fork and say, no, I cannot eat this piece of cow on my plate. I cannot eat this hen on my plate, this turkey, this pig. Because we want them all. I really believe that deep inside we want every sentient being to live his or her life to the fullest. And when I read about this McKeck story in Florida, that's what I'm reading. So here we are at Ask a Vegan, and I am here to help you do just that, transition to eating more healthy plant foods. I try to give lots of reasons why you want to do that. And again, you can always contact me at info@realmeals.org if you have specific questions or specific challenges. Okay, what else do we have to talk about when it comes to monkeys and bananas? Oh, yeah. So in this article, they mentioned Pierre Boulle, who was a novelist. He was the author of The Bridge Over River Kwai and also the author of Planet of the Apes. And I'm sure you remember the film series Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston, and this odd image of people being caged and people being shown off like animals in a zoo. And the apes are intelligent and the apes are in charge. I haven't read the book, The Planet of the Apes, but apparently the way it came about where the animals, the apes became in charge, it's rather chilling because we can see some of it actually happening. I'm not saying that the apes are going to take over, but in the story, humans were becoming complacent. Humans had trained animals to do certain tasks. The animals started to get smarter, and the people started to get lazy and started to accept the apes making decisions, started to accept not having to take responsibility. It was easier. The apes were providing food for them, and the humans became domesticated. And then you had this sci-fi movie that came out of it, Planet of the Apes, based on Pierre Boulle's book. And we see that more and more where people are complacent, comfortable, even though we may not like the way things are done, we may not like the way our government is doing things, we're not complaining, we're accepting. We're sitting at the television, nodding, shaking our head at things, eating our chips, drinking our soda, and letting things happen. And this is what I think is the scariest thing right now going on. We have so many opportunities to do amazing, great things. We've been on the moon. We're discovering so many things. And yet there are so many things that are wrong, and we allow them to happen. One of the things that's important to me is this form of activism, in a way, of choosing not to eat animals. This is something that I don't want to do. I haven't been doing it for decades, and I cannot even imagine today eating a living sentient being. It's not food to me. But it is a form of activism to talk about eating and choosing plants over animals for many, many reasons. Frankly, I think it's the easiest and most delicious form of activism you can do. It just makes sense. All right, let's retire the banana story and move on to the last thing I want to talk about today on Ask a Vegan, which is my recipe for the week. I made a ginger mango tofu dandelion tomato dish, and you could find it at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I wanted to talk about what inspired me to make this particular dish, which turned out to be crazy good. I was at a relative's bar mitzvah last week, and like most events, although this was very tastefully done and it wasn't ostentatious and overdone like so many different big events that go on here in New York City, weddings and bar mitzvahs and other lavish parties where there's just food and food and food and waste and all kinds of things that I find really unappealing. This was a very lovely event. It was tasteful. Got to see family members I haven't seen in a while. The food was reasonably sensible enough, not overdone, but there were leftovers. And I got to take home a bunch of the crudité, the raw vegetables that were left over. And I had a bag of cherry tomatoes that I got from this event, and I thought, okay, I've got to do something with them. I had a really ripe mango, and I had to do something with that. And I put together this dish where I sautéed a lot of ginger. I'm really in a ginger state of mind lately. It's just so good. And I added some mango, these cherry tomatoes, cooked it up with some cubed tofu. And I was thinking, you don't have to use tofu in this dish. I know there's there are a lot of people that like eating their tofu. Some people don't think soy is something they want to consume very often or at all. And I respect that, even though I think that organic soy is a healthy food. You can use a white bean or a garbanzo bean in this dish. It'll be pretty similar. And then you can use any green you want. I use dandelion and those little cherry tomatoes. And stir-frying this thing up, the cherry tomatoes were so nice. Not chopped tomatoes, although, you know, you could do whatever you want. And I love theme and variation. And if you didn't have a cherry tomato, you could certainly use chopped tomato. And the combination of a chopped tomato, I'm digressing here, but when you cook ginger and tomatoes and they mix up together, they give a very unusual and unique, delicious flavor. I remember the first time I had a mixture of the ginger and tomato, and someone said, "Do you know what's giving it that flavor?" And I didn't realize it had ginger in it, and it was really good, and I had no idea that it was the ginger giving it this intense, wonderful flavor. Ginger and tomato, really great. But in this particular dish that I made, I didn't chop the tomato, so the tomatoes were whole, and I love just biting into them. They were warm and juicy and amazing. And even more amazing was this dish as a leftover. There was time for the mango juice, and this was a really sweet mango. It practically melted. It was a kind of a fibrous mango. There are different kinds of mangoes out there, and the kind that you get will certainly characterize this dish a little more. There are some mangoes that are firmer, more gelatinous. This one was kind of it had some fiber in it, but when I cut it, it really just melted into juice. And it marinated into the tofu, and it made the tofu taste like candy, really. Such a surprising, delicious dish, gingered mango, tofu, dandelion, tomato. I think I called it ginger, bean and green with tomato and mango. Yeah, so I hope you enjoy that. I want to say that responsible eating and living is a 501c3 not-for-profit. And right now, there are just a couple of us that are doing everything for this organization. I really have so many things more that I want to do to help people learn about food and help people get to a better place with food. And the way we do that is with support from people like you. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. You can make a donation on our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I am so grateful to those of you who have already supported us. It means so much. Every time a donation comes in, I cry a little bit, actually, because I feel the community and the connection. So thank you for that. We've been putting out newsletters, e-newsletters, when you subscribe to responsibleeatingandliving.com, and we put them out once every other month, pretty much. Sometimes they come out more frequently, but basically it's just a summary of everything we've been doing. And if you're not always on our Facebook page and not visiting our website very often, you might miss some of these things. And it's always such a joy for me to put the newsletter together and realize all the things that have gone on in the last month or two. It's really an incredible amount of information, and I hope that you enjoy it and use it, because it's there for you and anyone else who's interested in this information. Thank you for listening. This is Ask a Vegan, and we're going to call it an end. Here's the real jingle. Thanks for listening.
R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L.
Real's good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do.
When it comes to good health,
we need facts that are true, to choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
You'll find the real tools for you.